This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, September 3rd, 2020. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us in today's edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Rob Hart, sitting in for Cisco Cotto today. The Cubs are teaming up with the company DraftKings for a sports book in Wrigleyville. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the weekly numbers on unemployment claims are out ahead of tomorrow's government jobs report for August. We're joined by Diane Swank, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based in Chicago. Diane, welcome back to the program. We talked to you 2 hours ago about that methodology change in the weekly applications for first-time unemployment benefits. But let's talk about the larger overall employment picture. How many people are currently unemployed in America, and what are the estimates say that how many people found work in the month of August?
Well, what we're looking for August, the unemployment claims are over 26 million, and that does some of that may be double counting. So we're not exactly sure exactly how many are unemployed, but I think it's, and also who is classified as unemployed. We're losing a lot of workers right now, most notably parents and especially women who cannot rejoin the labor force because their kids are not back in school. They're still online or in some form of a hybrid of an educational situation because we've not been able to get these COVID cases down lower. So they may not be included as employed because they've literally dropped out of the labor force. And we're seeing that across wage levels where, you know, that's not just the low-wage workers. It's hitting them disproportionately in their families. And it's showing up as food insecurity because they can't go back to work and be able to even afford to be able to feed their families. But we're also seeing it in higher-wage households. As we look at the employment data tomorrow that comes out, there will be a couple things that stick out. One is the slowdown in employment gains. I think we're going to see private employment gains slip below a million in the month of August. And that's important because we still have tens of millions who are unemployed. And so that is important that we're not chipping away at those, bringing people back as rapidly as we'd like. The other important issue about tomorrow is we're going to get a temporary boost from census workers doing that 2020 census. That'll be several hundred thousand workers that get a temporary job through the end of September. So that'll help total job gains. Those will be federal government workers. And then there's one other glitch in the data for the month of August, and that is education employment. We saw a very weird quirk in the way the seasonally adjusted data. We've been talking about these measurement problems, and they're coming through in all different ways. In July, we saw a boost to public education employment when it actually fell, and you're going to get that give back in those state and local education jobs, because even as school districts that go to online or do hybrid, and some school districts trying to bring students back, they're not bringing back as many support staff and administrative staff as they have in the past, and so that's a miss on a seasonally adjusted basis. So many people connected to the education system in the United States have been hit as well, and that's something that we worry about, the lingering problems at the state and local level, most notably in our own backyard where we're having a hard time covering our bills to begin with, but the whole blown in state and local budgets by COVID has been quite significant on loss in everything from income tax revenues to sales tax revenues across the board, every state being affected. And Washington's inability to sort of move on that is going to be something we're going to see as a headwind as we go into the fall.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Diane Swank, chief economist, Grant Thornton in Chicago, just talking about the wide blast crater of the of COVID-19 on the economy and on the United States. Coming up, legal sports gambling sparks a partnership involving the Cubs.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Cubs have announced a multi-year partnership with the company DraftKings that includes plans for putting a sports book in the Wrigleyville neighborhood. We welcome in Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Danny, welcome back to the program. This is just another sign of the many ways in which legalized sports gambling is creating a windfall for everybody in the world of sports, from sports media to the teams themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the Cubs' way to try to seize that and, you know, capitalize on it. This would be, you know, they're talking about building a significant, I mean, DraftKings says this could be the largest standalone sports book in the country if they have their way. Outside Wrigley Field, likely. And, you know, obviously this is a potential new revenue source for the Cubs. And, you know, it's, I think, one of the things that the teams, anyone in sports looks at when it comes to, you know, sports gambling is that, you know, when people have skin in the game, they tend to watch more and consume more team content. And that translates to higher ratings and, you know, more eyeballs, more sponsorship deals, and maybe even more, you know, larger broadcast rights fees. And that's driving a lot of decisions that teams make these days.
And who gets a piece of the pie here? One would assume it's the state of Illinois, the Cubs, and DraftKings all stand to reap the benefits here?
Yeah, we don't know the details of exactly how the money will flow here, but, you know, the Cubs have signed this deal, a partnership with DraftKings. DraftKings will apply for a license from the Illinois Gaming Board to run this sports betting operation. The Cubs and DraftKings need to have the city's approval because the city doesn't allow gambling in, at this point, although that certainly looks like it's going to change as they push for a casino. And just to be able to develop this building. And, you know, again, city has an incentive because they obviously have a big budget hole to fill and they want to find new ways to generate tax revenue. And, you know, DraftKings and the Cubs, and DraftKings especially, has been trying to get into the Illinois market in a big way, and this is what they think will be their big flagship here.
Two-part question here. First off, is this something that's going to be expanded across Major League Baseball? That's question. That's part number one. And part number two is this is happening on the north side of Chicago. The south side of Chicago has a little bit of history involving gambling on baseball. And do you think the White Sox, you know, given the fact they've always held Shoeless Joe Jackson and Buck Weaver at kind of arm's length, would they participate in this in the future?
Yeah, well, you know, as far as the first part of the question goes, there are a lot of people who think this is one of the first examples in what will be a wave of sports books on site at pro stadiums and arenas. I mean, that's been the norm for a long time in Europe. And, you know, now with, you know, sports betting becoming more legal around the United States, you have leagues and teams starting to embrace it and say, well, how can we, you know, make this part of our experience and, you know, maybe not overwhelm and maybe not sort of bring questions about the integrity of the game, but how can they, you know, take advantage of it? And as far as the Sox go, you know, I would be surprised if they don't, you know, try to make this part of, you know, their game day experience. I mean, there are some questions, I suppose, around the fact that, you know, it's a publicly owned stadium that they play at. So, you know, there are probably some questions that need to be asked about how they'll take advantage of it. But you know, this is what the state allowed for. The state, the new law that was passed last year allowed for seven sports wagering licenses to be given out to arenas and stadiums that have more than 17,000 capacity. And that includes Guaranteed Rate Field, Soldier Field, United Center, and Wrigley Field, and a few others around the state. So it's going to be very interesting, but I do think that we're going to see most teams try in some way to take advantage of this.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Coming up next, the government urging states to be ready to distribute a coronavirus vaccine by November. We'll go in depth.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Centers for Disease Control is urging governors to be prepared for the distribution of a coronavirus vaccine on November 1st. We're joined by Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, welcome welcome back to the program. The date is jumping out at everyone because November 1st is 2 days before November 3rd, which is Election Day. But if you look at the research, Michelle, this kind of lines up with the assertion by some doctors that November 1st is kind of on the upper end of the optimistic range for when a vaccine would be available.
Officials from Health and Human Services have told us that the November 1st date doesn't have anything to do with the presidential election and is not politically driven, but exactly as you say, Rob, that it's because that's when we might actually start seeing results for coronavirus vaccine trials and when we're going to start needing to roll out vaccination strategies. And what they're talking about is distribution centers and other facilities that are going to have to be up and operating in order to get this distribution happening. Even with the November 1st date, that's not the date that they're saying you'll get the injection. That's just when they need to have those facilities operational.
Yeah, this is a tremendous logistical undertaking to get millions of doses of a COVID vaccine out to people. And even then, there was another analysis this morning that said there should be a hierarchy of who gets the shot first.
Healthcare providers are expected to be offered the shot first, and then people who are in nursing homes and other high-risk environments, then people with comorbidities and other illnesses that will make them at much increased risk from dying or getting sick if they actually do contract coronavirus. Of course, it'll be interesting to see what happens once all of these people are offered the vaccine to see how many are going to actually step up and get it.
Now, where are we at in terms of the vaccines that are in the phase three trials? Any new information that has come out, or are they still in the process of recruiting volunteers and giving them the injection?
Everyone is still recruiting volunteers. I think the most advanced study that we have has 23,000 out of the 37,000. I'm sorry, it has 23,000 out of the 30,000 patients enrolled, not patients, but volunteers enrolled in the trial. Of course, they're going to need to get two doses, so we're still a ways off from actually having them completely having been vaccinated, and then we'll track to see what their infection rates are. But it is pretty good, the numbers. And also, I heard two things within the last couple of days that actually give a little bit of insight into what people are thinking of. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who of course is leading this on behalf of the NIAID, said that it is possible that if there is one of the trials that shows stupendous results, they might stop it early and make sure that everybody gets it. That's probably less likely. The chief executive officer of Pfizer, though, they said that they expect to be able to complete their clinical trial by the end of October. That means they won't be asking for an emergency use authorization, but an actual full approval from the FDA. They'll have to get the data. It's definitely going to be difficult, but the fact that he's even saying it's possible is significant.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, getting the most out of your tech dollar in a remote learning and working from home world.
This is Chicago's all news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Mike Krauser. Joe Biden takes his campaign to Kenosha 2 days after the president's visit.
States are being told to be prepared to distribute a COVID-19 vaccine in November. In Technology Thursday, with more schooling and working from home, it's important to maximize your tech dollars and efficiency. General Motors and Honda forge a strategic alliance in North America. WBBM Business, the markets are still down by a lot. The Dow is down 764. The NASDAQ is down 548. The S&P 500 is down 120. AccuWeather says sunshine, patchy clouds today, becoming increasingly windy and warm. A high of 86. It is 86 degrees in Chicago under mostly sunny skies at 1231. And topping our news at the half hour, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is heading to Kenosha for a visit today. The story from WBBM's Mike Krauser.
The former vice president and his wife will meet with the family of Jacob Blake, the man who was shot 7 times in the back by a police officer, and will take part in a community meeting in a city that has seen days of protests and violence.
Protesting is a right, but to engage in violence, burning, looting, the rest, in the name of protesting, is wrong. and the persons should be held accountable.
Biden's visit comes 2 days after President Trump visited Kenosha and met with police officers and toured damage. The president said yesterday in North Carolina, violent protesters need to be met with force.
These people only know one thing, and that's strength. That's all they know, and we have strength.
The president and his opponent are at odds over whether the police officer who fired the 7 shots should be prosecuted. Mike Krauser, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
The federal government has sent a letter to governors asking them to be ready to distribute a coronavirus vaccine by November 1st, 2 days before the presidential election. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar tells CBS This Morning the date was not picked out of political considerations.
If we get a vaccine, we need to be ready to distribute that, and that's why the career team led by Nancy Messonnier at CDC put that letter out to the governor saying, in the event everything hits, we need you to be ready to distribute this vaccine.
The CDC is also outlining other possible schedules for the vaccine. It's 12:32. The noon business hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are in the red today. We're joined by Jeff Kilberg, CEO, KKM Financial in Chicago. Jeff, welcome back to the program. It seems in this case, when it comes to the tech stocks that were fueling the rally earlier this week, what goes up must come down.
Well, necessarily, that could be true, Rob, but there's no panic flag. We're not seeing anyone in panic mode. We are seeing significant selling pressure. Look at the NASDAQ, down nearly 5%. So I think when you look at that type of tape, when you see the Dow Jones almost down 1,000, I think it's the velocity of this move can take your breath away. But remember, the S&P 500, it's up over 60% from the March 23rd low. So I understand. You look at Zoom. You look at Tesla. Tesla, for example, down nearly 15% just today. It's down 30% in the last 3 trading sessions. But Tesla is still up over 450% year to date. So I think you have to keep it in context. We've seen a lot of technology names in the wake of COVID-19 really attract assets. Look at Zoom, up over 500% year to date. So that makes sense why you're seeing some profit taking in names like that. But certainly, just about everyone owns Apple. No one loves when Apple goes down 5.5%, Rob.
Well, so this is a situation where you look at these numbers and say, well, the Dow is down 800 points, the NASDAQ is down 570, the S&P 500 down 125. You look at those numbers, they're eye-popping at first, but this may just be, you know, a hiccup.
That's right. And if you look at the last 5 months, so there's been 26 times in the history of the stock market that we've seen 5 consecutive monthly gains. Those 26 times, going back all the way to 1950, Rob, guess how many times the market was higher a year later? Ding, 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 26 times. So right now, this is a little bit of volatility, hard to digest, but we are in a very optimistic spot. I think all the Federal Reserve liquidity, the central bankers globally are injecting liquidity. I think the market trajectory is still higher, but there are going to be some fits and starts. In a day like today, you're seeing a lot of profit taking, even a name like Microsoft down 5%. That is remarkable when you see a name like Apple or Microsoft, which is nearly $2 trillion in market capitalization, to have that type of move. But this is the new normal, Rob. This is the new normal in the velocity of the markets as you see global markets so intertwined.
Well, with such a fast sell-off today, do you expect the markets to react at all to the jobs report tomorrow?
I think there's a lot of preparation going on. I think you bring up a great point. So people are repositioning. There's certainly a reaction to the jobs report if we beat expectations, miss expectations, because that's what the Federal Reserve is looking at. But right now, the Federal Reserve continues to commit in unlimited capacity and in perpetuity, and that is supporting the market. That's the safety net underneath the stock market, no matter how elevated we are at this moment in time.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jeff Kilberg, CEO, KKM Financial, based in Chicago.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and more people are facing tech issues with remote learning and working from home. Let's get some help from Jennifer Jolly, USA Today Tech Life columnist, founder and editor-in-chief of Techish.com, based in San Francisco. Jennifer, welcome back to the program. This is an annual segment where we run down the latest and greatest in back-to-school gadgets, and just to show you how long ago 1 year ago was, you were here in Chicago in studio. We did this in person, and we were talking about souped-up trapper keepers and lights you could put on your books. And then now, thanks to the pandemic and remote learning, the whole idea of education has been given a top-to-down technological overhaul.
And not only that, but the must-haves this year are out of stock. Laptops are out of stock due to supply shortages, supply chain issues, as well as tariffs, mainly with China, where a lot of these gadgets come from. So we're not only dealing with, oh my gosh, we need a whole different slew of technology this year, but we're dealing with shortages too. So, wow, what a difference a year makes.
Well,
right?
I can tell you this personally, even though our kids are actually doing in-person learning, we do have a birthday coming up. And because she's in school, I can say this, she's getting a desk. And we had the hardest time just trying to find a desk. You go to, Walmart, Wayfair, IKEA, any place that had school supplies, they were back ordered well into October. The same thing with tablets. If you wanted to buy a refurbished iPad, you were waiting for a very long time. So everybody grabbed up, desks and tech and all this, work from home or learn from home infrastructure went flying off the shelves.
That's exactly right. So I have some advice there. One is if you need a desk, a great sort of in-home portable work solution that's fantastic for kids, Chicago's own Edge Desk Company just got a brand new stock in. These are $400 desk chair combinations. I like to call them the MacGyver of work from home solutions. I've been reviewing these since they first came out. Now, your producer, Andy, he is not a huge fan because he is extremely tall. And he said it's like wrapping himself around, something that his long, long legs just won't work for. But I am not so tall. I'm 5'4". It's perfect for my height for kids. It's adjustable. It's ergonomic. So I love that it's Chicago-based and that he just got a huge fresh bunch in store. These are $400 desks. Highly recommend those. And then for laptops, tablets, go Chrome at home. Chromebooks can offer everything that most students, especially K-8, need for a fraction of the cost. But don't get sucked in by Labor Day sales at big box stores. The $100 to $400, those lower price models are not the same. So check out the sweet, sweet deals at places like Adorama. There's an amazing Chromebook that is just, it's in stock. It's from Lenovo. I've written about it on my website at techish.com, as well as my columns in USA Today. I have lots of options that are well worth those $200 to $300 price range that are in stock. So never fear, Chromebooks are here. And then do shop refurbished, but go straight to the manufacturers because you get a better warranty. You make sure the parts and pieces are new. You'll get great battery life. So lots of little tips and tricks to kind of work around some of the issues out there.
And then of all the tech that we've had to really just take a crash course on in the last 6 months, what is going to stick around once the pandemic ends and we kind of go back to the way things were?
Well, adding affordable fixes to what you already have, things like a digital locker for homework and other school assignments, ways to add storage to those Chromebooks. One new gadget out for that is WD's new My Passport SSD. It's a great little digital locker for homework, other assignments. That will stick around. That's available now. Also, smarter shopping, using services like Now in Stock and Zoolert to help you keep track of products at several outlets at once. We've also learned we need to sign up for big box stores, back to school specials, as well as in-stock alerts. That's one of my tricks and tips for shopping at Best Buy. You get a lot of deals and things that most people don't get when you know that little trick. And then last but not least, there's a company called Affirm that I've been reporting about a lot lately. They're really helping tackle deferred interest. So especially coming up, big, huge holiday weekend, lots of shopping. Retailers often pair an enticing offer like no interest if paid in full with a clause that lets the deal turn ugly. We can't afford that anymore. So if you click Affirm on checkout, then you know upfront exactly how much interest you'll pay, which a lot of times is 0%. It's just a more transparent way to move forward into the future. All of that is here to stay.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jennifer Jolly, USA Today Tech Life columnist, founder, editor-in-chief of techish.com based in San Francisco. And hopefully, 1 year from now, we can do this segment in person once again. Join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday when we talk to a personal trainer who provides socially distanced fitness classes in parks and public spaces.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
General Motors is teaming with Honda in what's being called a strategic alliance in North America. Let's learn more from John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, welcome back to the program. What is this alliance between one of the big three and Honda?
Yeah, Rob, very interesting that these two are partnering up. Specifically, Honda wants access to GM's new, what they call architecture, you know, sort of the chassis and all that, for electric vehicles. Also, GM has developed a very unique battery, too, which might be advantageous. Honda wants part of that, too. But it goes beyond that. They're also going to be collaborating on other kinds of vehicles with regular piston engines in them. And then Honda's also going to be getting OnStar in its electric vehicles to start with, and it sure sounds like it's going to spread to the rest of the lineup as well.
It's been decades since you could really draw the line between foreign and domestic cars because of where the factories are placed and where parts are sourced from. But is this kind of unprecedented in the automotive field?
Not really. In fact, this is part of a bigger trend. So you got to remember, Ford and Volkswagen have teamed up together. Chrysler went with Fiat, and both of them are going to go with Peugeot. Toyota owns chunks of Mazda and Subaru. Renault, Nissan, and Mitsubishi have all joined forces. So it should not be any surprise, really, that General Motors and Honda decided that they ought to partner up together.
And is with GM's electric car infrastructure and their battery technology, has GM turned into a leader when it comes to EV tech?
Well, too early to say, because this new electric vehicle architecture, the new battery, they're just building the plants to make this stuff right now. They're going to be out in the market in another couple of years. Maybe then we can determine who's in the lead. Right now, you'd have to say it's Tesla, though, not any of the traditional automakers.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.